Theirs is one of the great love stories, and I mean true life love stories, in the history of music. Robert Schumann, an immensely creative composer, Clara Wieck, one of the great pianists of her time. After a dramatic courtship, they married, and she became Clara Schumann. Their relationship was passionate and tormented, full of deep mutual admiration, concern, respect, understanding. But did they ever actually talk with each other? Pianist Jonathan Biss is joining us for day two of a three-day look at the life and work of Robert Schumann. Jonathan, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Clara and Robert Schumann, how much do we actually know about their life together?
Well, we know a lot because most of their life together was written down. They were people who had such difficulty putting their feelings into words that they, from the very beginning of their marriage, had this joint diary in which everything they had to say to one another is in there. It's the spoken content of a marriage in written form.
They communicated with each other on paper in this diary, but they also communicated with each other in their music. And Robert, in particular, put so many feelings about Clara into music.
Yeah, I mean, all of his music is ultimately about her. Her name appears in some of the pieces, you know, spelling, you know, the C-A-A from Clara's in the piano concerto. There's a movement of Carnival, which is called Chiarina, which was his name for her. And there was a theme of hers, which he loved. Whenever it appears in his music, which is very often, it sort of becomes a musical representation of all that he felt for her.
And what is that theme?
The theme is so basically it outlines this falling fifth. Clara. It's, you know, it's her name in sound. And as you say, it takes so many different forms. I mean, sometimes it is just affection and love. Sometimes it's the moment of greatest intensity. Sometimes it's filled with anger. Everything that she elicited from him is in the music in that fifth, in one time or another.
You have a piano piece by Schumann that you're about to play for us. You're going to play a section of Kreisleriana. There's a letter from Robert to Clara where I think he's writing about this piece. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's the letter in which he told her that he had written the piece. This is the pertinent part. Just think, since my last letter, I've again finished a whole book of new things. I will call it Kreisleriana, in which you and one of your ideas play the main role, and I will dedicate it to you, you and no one else. Then as you recognize yourself, you will smile fondly.
And this is just before they were able to get married, when they're still struggling to be together. And I wonder if you could pick out a movement for us. And do we hear this falling fifth in this movement?
We do. Most of the music has a kind of surface calm, but the one moment where it really explodes is when the fifth appears.
Could you show us how that happens before we hear the movement?
Comes up like that. It's an outburst of emotion.
Bum, ba, bum, ba, bum. All right, well, let's hear that outburst of emotion in the middle of the rest of this movement, sehr innig und nicht zu rasch, which might translate as very inwardly and not too quickly. The second movement from this 8-part piece called Kreisleriana, music written in 1838 by the 28-year-old Robert Schumann, played for us by pianist Jonathan Biss. Gorgeous, gorgeous performance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan Bisk in the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Part two from an eight-part piece written in 1838 by Robert Schumann. The larger collection is called Kreisleriana. That movement, entitled Sehr innig und nicht zu rasch, very inwardly and not too quickly. There is this duality in this, and it goes back and forth very quickly between the gentle and reflective and the active.
Well, Schumann divided his personality into these two alter egos he created for himself. Florestan, who was the doer, and Eusebius, the dreamer. And you very often feel that there's a conversation, if not a war, going on between the two of them.
So that's one of the things behind this piece. But there's also what you described earlier, which is a hidden message from Robert to Clara, with whom he was in love and whom he would marry shortly, saying, hey, your theme is in here. Listen for your theme, and you'll smile to yourself when you hear my love for you go by in this piece.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that she did not smile. The letter that she wrote back to him, she said, you shock me sometimes. I wonder if it is true that this man will be my husband. Sometimes I have the idea that I will never be able to satisfy you, but in spite of that, you could always love me. It was almost too much for her.
Yeah, the way Robert Schumann, I mean, he felt so deeply for this young woman. I mean, it was just this cascade of emotion from him to her.
Absolutely. And I think it's not surprising that she was very, very ambivalent about it. I think that she probably wondered if her whole life and her whole sense of being was going to be consumed by this person with this totally outsized imagination. And in fact, that is exactly what happened. I mean, Clara Schumann was known long before they were married as one of the great pianists in the world. And she more or less, for the years that they were married, did not perform. He came first, his music, she was really shunted into the background. And it may be that that was part of her fear.
I'm talking about the relationship between Robert Schumann and Clara Schumann. And this is day two of a larger conversation we're having with pianist Jonathan Bisk, a three-day conversation about the life and work of Robert Schumann. Tomorrow we'll talk about Schumann as the first composer to be nostalgic for music of the past. Jonathan Bisk in the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. And Jonathan, I'll see you again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it.